Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio, an educational outreach program of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. My co-host tonight is Carol Walker, Director of Field Documentation for Wild Horse Freedom Federation, and also one of my favorite friends. Thanks for joining me, Carol. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I was having some problems with audio. Go ahead.
Okay. I heard a beep, but then I didn't hear anything. Thanks for joining me, Carol. Are you there?
We're going to on air right now.
Okay. Yes.
Carol, you're live and on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay, Deb. Yes, thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, yeah, sorry we had a little audio glitch, everybody. I couldn't hear Carol, and I thought maybe nobody was hearing me. Anyhow, our guest tonight is Claire Staples, the founder and president of Sky Dog Sanctuary. And Sky Dog Sanctuary has locations in Malibu, California, Mariposa, California, and a 9,000 area ranch near Bend, Oregon. And we're going to get right to it. So, Claire, welcome to the show.
Having me on the show.
And
thank you for having me.
Sure. So, why don't you get started and just start telling everyone a little bit about Sky Dog Sanctuary, what you're doing, and then we can get to those saving the twins. So,
absolutely, I'd be happy to. So, yes, I my interest in saving Mustangs has sort of even preceded getting our 9,000-acre sanctuary, the main sanctuary up in Oregon. But I have had a love of Mustangs for many years now, and originally adopted one Mustang named Buddy, who kind of started this whole crazy adventure. And I was saving Mustangs kind of locally. I have a ranch in Malibu and a ranch in Calabasas and then another ranch now in Mariposa. And I kind of, as I went down this rabbit hole of Mustang rescue advocacy, like educating myself around the issues, I realized just how much help they needed and how many needed help. So I made the crazy decision to buy a huge piece of land because I felt like that was how I could best serve them, really. And you know, we originally set up our nonprofit 3 years ago or 4 years ago. I'm very bad with years. They seem to fly by. But I wrote a mission statement then, and it's like when you're applying for a 501c3, you have to kind of write a mission statement. And back then, I really didn't understand all the nuances, and I said that I wanted to rescue at-risk Mustangs from kill pens and BLM holding pens. And it's really ironic to me now because I sort of didn't realize what I was saying at the time. But our journey has taken us kind of from our original, in our first year, we probably rescued the majority of our horses from auctions that where there were kill buyers present, and also from kill pens direct from shipping to slaughter, and then also situations that Mustangs had found themselves in. Like every horse we took, because the second part of our mission statement was that we wanted to educate and raise awareness. So every Mustang we took, we tried to have a backstory either to the HMA they were from or, you know, sort of demonstrating a point of the bad places these wild horses can end up in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we would buy a $100 horse from Craigslist and explain to people that, you know, don't put your horse for free on Craigslist, you know, and sort of get let people get to know these horses. Because for me, it was always back to they are not a number. You know, they have this huge brand on their neck and the BLM will only refer to them by their tag number. But I guess my whole mission sort of came back down to telling their stories. And if that could raise awareness and educate people, but more than anything else, if it could open people's hearts to understand what incredible animals these are, you know, to understand, you know, they're living, breathing, sentient beings with families, with friends, you know, that they're bonded to, you know, likes and dislikes and different personalities. And I guess my mission became a lot about trying to get people to fall in love with the American Mustang and to see them as individuals and
mm-hmm.
to kind of, because I felt like if people made an emotional connection, they would then take an action. And that was kind of what my formula became. I would tell a story about this Mustang and this happened and now let's try and get the SAFE Act passed. Or, you know, it was always down to sort of drawing people along, you know, having them fall in love with these horses and then tell them ways in which they could help. And that really has remained the same. And I guess in the last year, I mean, incredibly enough, my original relationship with the BLM Corral at Burns began with one of the ladies there reaching out to me and actually asking us if we would take two bonded mares from, they were from Sulphur, Utah, but they'd been adopted out. They'd gotten in a very bad situation. They both came back, you know, half bald from rain rot, and things had been really bad for them. And now they were on the internet adoption, and one of them was getting a lot of bids, and the other one had zero bids because she was a little more unfortunate looking than the very pretty one. So
mm-hmm.
it kind of grew from that really, really positive beginning because it opened. I was like, well, that's strange. You know, I thought the BLM were the enemy. I thought they didn't care about these horses. And it sort of, I decided to kind of wipe that slate clean and remove that thought from my mind and really move forward with the relationship based on an open mind and an open heart and see what horses, you know, I could save.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of led down a path to the last year where my relationship had grown with the people at the Crowls, and they began to start asking me, reaching out to me about some special needs Mustangs, which I felt was an incredibly positive relationship. I felt like it was a win for the horse. It was a win for the BLM. It was a win for us. And I have to say, it's not something that we, you know, it is incredibly expensive. That's what I'm saying. So taking a special needs Mustang to gentle them for treatment, for x-rays, to give them, you know, meds to wash wounds, all the things that we've done, it's incredibly time-consuming. But for us, every Mustang mattered. And these were horses that, you know, were going to be euthanized unless we took them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it began. And it began, like, we took a number of orphan foals off the Dawn Springs Roundup that had either lost their mothers or the stress of the Roundup had caused them not to, you know, their mothers had rejected them or they were not nursing or they were very badly injured. And so we took four of those plus an elderly mare with a foal at her side who had sort of pushed her foal off and wasn't doing very well. She was very skinny off the range, actually. So we took that six and then we brought them back to health and actually put those four babies in with a horse that we adopted from Bruno after I went
mm-hmm.
on the tour last year. So it was kind of a really positive, and every single time I went out of my way to try and stress the positive relationship, you know, the benefit for the horses, thank the BLM for reaching out to us. And I felt like there were most of the comments were very positive. You know, they were very sort of, well, you know, the same as me, you know, well, there must be someone there with a heart and how wonderful they reached out. And that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've changed my opinion of the BLM. And that was definitely 95% of the comments. And I felt like we were rewriting a narrative to a certain degree, you know, that it wasn't just black and white, that there might be people within the BLM that cared, that there might be, you know, people that were willing to work with organizations or advocacy groups for
mm-hmm.
the good of the horse. And it filled me with a lot of hope. And I felt like, and I suggested a couple of times that maybe other corrals could maybe, you know, there could be a special needs section where maybe when they do an internet adoption or they do a roundup that they could maybe post four or five horses that were blind in one eye or a little lame or club-footed. And the club-footed issue was something I'd addressed many times just because of the high number of them that were shot for that reason at roundups. And
yeah,
something
yeah.
that I had often questioned, I had often, you know, said, look, you know, club-footedness isn't a death sentence, you know, and there are varying levels of that. You know, if a horse can run for miles being chased by a helicopter, has been surviving on the range with a family, I didn't see that it should be a blanket decision and that this possibly was being used as an excuse for euthanizing a lot of the horses. And
mm-hmm.
it was something I'd said before, and we were given the opportunity to take in, I went up to the corral to do some paperwork one day, and I was told about this filly who had been returned by an adopter for being club-footed, and she was going to be euthanized, and they asked us if we wanted to take her. And every time it was sort of almost with a sigh, like, oh, no, you know, but it when you're faced with, okay, she's going to be euthanized unless you take her, I really did try, especially to keep that door open, to keep the relationship positive. I said yes, you know, and Beth is an amazing horse, so that was a wonderful win. And we also took in earlier this year two other Warm Springs geldings, one of whom, they had both been put in the confinement pen. One of them had run into panels and injured himself badly, and the other one had cut his fetlock, and then an infection had got into the joint. So
mm-hmm.
it was kind of fused in, it was huge and fused badly, and we decided to take them both and just see what we could do, because we've always had a sort of argument that, like, at least let these horses be seen, you know, and that comes down to, again, another issue Carol and I have talked about the off-range facilities. I'm just like, I understand, you know, you've rounded up these horses, but let people see them, give them a chance. You know, let people know where they are. Let people come and you know, understand, like, get their tag numbers if their horse is off the range that they might be interested in or have followed in the wild. And so these were kind of threads woven through our criteria for taking horses, as well as trying to do, on a personal level, a small amount of advocacy with the issues that we saw. You know, it wasn't
mm-hmm.
like stop every roundup. We're going to scream at the BLM and bash them every opportunity we get. And I certainly do not, I certainly understand and feel for the people that do that. And I definitely think there's a place for it. But when I had this working relationship with the corrals, I tried very carefully to walk a tightrope between dealing with my local corrals and maybe attacking the BLM or criticizing the BLM on a policy level or at a government level or at roundups, because it was less personal, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I still wanted to be able to walk in there and rescue a horse if need be.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what happened recently was that we went and rescued. I found a horse on their inventory list that had been there for 28 years, and I couldn't understand why. And he turned out to be a saddle horse that belonged to one of the wranglers, and he wasn't in great shape. And we said we would take him, and so happily took him. You know, he's like, we've given him this most honorable retirement, and he's loved by everyone. And we took one, we had already taken 10 Warm Springs donkeys. We'd actually asked to take the entire herd, but
mm-hmm.
we were refused that. So we did adoptions for 10 of them. They had come there, but one adoption for a lost donkey had fallen through. And I wrote what I thought was a very sweet and endearing story about a sad donkey that had been left behind, because I had always been told he was the last adoption. And I wrote it from the perspective of Winnie the Pooh and Eeyore, and that, you know, like, Eeyore says a lot of sayings, like, you know, I love friends, you know, and there he was left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I put this post up. Oftentimes I've gone to post something and thought, oh, I hope this doesn't upset anyone. This was a post that never occurred to me could upset anyone. It was on Easter Saturday, and it was about a poor, sad donkey called Eeyore. And
mm-hmm.
I then got, was told that this was, like, dishonest, and I was lying because I said it was the last donkey, but apparently somewhere in the crowd there were other sad donkeys about to go to an expo. So I was like, okay, change the wording. And then on the Monday, I posted a video of Beth, a sort of last touch, first touch thing
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
we're gentling Beth when she gets out of the trailer, and it was the last touch at the Krauss, and it was maybe the only time I kind of thought, okay, I haven't said anything, but it wasn't a great video because Beth was struggling a lot, and they were trying to cut her tag off, and she was slamming her face into the panels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was then told by email that because of the negativity surrounding these posts, that I would no longer be allowed to take special needs Mustangs, and that from now on they were going to euthanize them because they felt it was projecting a negative image. I took both posts down within 2 hours when I understood they had been perceived negatively, and I actually didn't think they were negative. We didn't get hundreds of negative comments underneath or anything. I don't think a
mm-hmm.
sad donkey was bringing down the BLM. But
mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was the reason that was given that. And, you know, it sort of, for me, it was like also, well, I don't really understand. If I'm just supposed to write nothing but good about the BLM, and I'm some sort of PR person, I should be paid more because this is like costing a fortune. And now everything I post is censored. You know, we don't like that, or we don't like this. And it felt like the relationship had actually become a little toxic in that.
Well, they're overstepping their bounds onto free speech too. You know,
yeah,
I mean, that's not right.
So.
You know, and I think people don't understand. You had been up before you received this email telling you that they weren't going to let you have special needs Mustangs anymore. Hadn't you already flown up to see the twins?
Well,
was
no.
it their agreement?
Funnily enough, the timeline was that I got the first email telling me that I would no longer be able to take special needs horses and they were going to be euthanized instead of coming to us. I then answered several times that I felt like, you know, this was really unfair and that maybe he didn't like me anymore. But, you know, that was trivial in the life of a horse, you know,
mm-hmm,
losing
mm-hmm.
its life or being able to come to us. And I felt that if a sanctuary was standing here offering to take them, they should at least give us the opportunity. And I wrote a lot of emails. I didn't have a reply to any of them. So I just sort of felt stumped, and I didn't really know what to do. And I was obviously busy, you know, caring for the horses that we do have and all of the other different things that were going on. So I didn't say anything, you know, other than replying, pleading my case, asking for us, please would you reconsider, please would you let us take the special needs horses. We're still open to doing that. I still think we can have a working relationship. I don't think the posts were negative, all that kind of thing. So a couple of weeks went by, like 2 or 3 weeks, and this was all going on and, you know, me writing replies, not getting anything back. And then I was contacted by the Corrals to tell me about a mare who'd had twins. And the strangest thing was, because we have a mare here expecting a foal and she had gotten enormous, she still is enormous because she's still pregnant, a lot mm-hmm. of people were commenting maybe she has twins. And people were, like, talking about twins. So I had Googled it literally 2 days before. I had Googled how rare it is to have twins. Like, is that possible to have twins? Could she be carrying twins? Because it wasn't something that had ever really – I hadn't thought about it before. I didn't know how often it happened. And I realized, like, it's miraculous. 1 in 10,000 horses, you know, even carry – and much lower than that in carrying them to full term and, you know, being able to give birth to them. And often all three horses die during the process. And so I had read a lot about it literally 2 days before I get a message from one of the corral staff asking, telling me that they have a mare with twins. And I was like, oh my goodness, do you understand how rare that is? How are they? You know, that's incredible. And then I was asked to take them. You know, they said that, and very, very nicely, you know, one
mm-hmm.
of the staff there said that they understood that they were a special adoption, that they had special needs in terms of, like, knowing that I would give them the best food, supplements, minerals, you know, vet care if necessary, because one was a lot smaller than the other, apparently. And I said, yes, 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 yes. I think this is, and I said, I just want you to know if you can communicate to Rob, if he knows about it, that I will write nothing but positive. I think this could be an amazing thing. We could have equine magazines all over the world, you know, that these amazing, you know, this horse was rounded up in the wild and now she's had babies at the Krauss and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll set up
and,
an Instagram.
And just so our listeners who are newer to the subject, Rob is Rob Sharp, who is the Wild Horse and Burro specialist there at the Burns Corrals in Oregon. So that's where who we're referring to is Rob Sharp. He's BLM personnel there. He kind of runs the place, runs the corral.
Yeah, he does. And so I'd already had this one email from him saying I couldn't take special needs, and I was kind of surprised I was now being asked to take the Marin Falls, because I was like, I thought I couldn't take any more special needs. And they were like, no, this isn't special needs. This is just an adoption, you know, just so we know that they're going to a good place, that they're going to get extra care. You know, we knew that you'd be really happy about it. You know, it's wonderful. You know, it's never happened at the Crowls before and all this kind of stuff. So I said, you know, I just want to reassure you, I will do this as such a positive, you know, this is a celebration, this is a wonderful thing, you know, it'll be like just the most amazing thing to show the strength and resilience and endurance of these amazing horses. So I then arranged to fly up. I flew, because I was here on kind of full watch, I flew up. I had something to do there in the afternoon. The next morning, I drove to the Crowls, which is a good 2.5 hours away from our ranch. I saw the Marin Falls, and I sat in the mud just watching them, taking pictures of them, talking to them. And I often say to them, don't show me a horse unless you're asking me to take it, because I, you know, something happens in your heart, you know, when you love horses. And it, you can make an emotional connection. And I do have feelings about them. And, you know, I was telling the babies, you know, your lives are going to mean something, and you're going to stay with your mama. And, you know, the crazy things that I say as a horse lover. But, you know, I left really happy. I drove to the airport in hail and sleet, and I nearly killed myself. So I 3 hours at the airport, I fly back down to Malibu. And even on the plane, I was like looking at the pictures in my camera, Carol will appreciate this, and just zooming in on them and looking at their faces. And, you know, my eyes were like filling up with tears. I felt so overwhelmed and choked up just even thinking, you know, this is just such a wonderful story, and, you know, I'm going to do right by these horses. And I certainly had never thought or intended to take another mare and foal pair, you know, but I felt like this was very special. It felt like it was would be a very positive thing, would maybe raise awareness if we could get stories told on them. So I guess that's where I was. And then, unfortunately, I got a message, first of all, just saying there was a glitch and that the mare was on the space study list. And I kind of came back a couple of times saying, well, surely, you know, you said there are 300 people, 300 horses on the list of horses that you'd compiled. You know, can't you swap her out? Or, you know, now she's had twins, you know. And then it's funny because I got the message. I then got an official email from – I actually wrote to Lisa Grant. And Lisa Grant was the woman that wrote the list of the horses on the space study. So it's kind of she's in charge.
She's in charge, yes.
Choosing the horses, I guess, for the spay. So I wrote to her. I'd never met her, but I just wrote her a letter just like, you know, I didn't want this to be by text message, or I kind of wanted to formally ask to take the Marin Falls, and I explained how rare they are. I explained what special needs they have, that, you know, that we would give them special care and extra care. And basically I was taking three equines, and, you know, surely that trumped, you know, an adoption offer, surely trumped her being part of this space study. And
would the foals have a better chance of survival, Claire, if they were with their mother? I mean, besides all the TLC you would give them and vet care, they're better off. Their chances for survival will be greater if they're with their mom, correct?
I definitely felt like that. I mean, you know, they were both nursing, and, you know, I was very aware that the space study is scheduled for August. That's 2 months away. And, you know, they usually wean at more like 6 months than, you know, 2 or 3 months. So then it got me thinking, like, are they taking the babies away and then putting them back on the mothers after the spay? Or are they just weaning them early and throwing them out into a full pen? So it kind of like opened all these questions and worries to me, because I was concerned for them. And, you know, and also I felt like it was their mistake. Someone called me and asked me to come up there. I'd already made an emotional connection, and now I was being told I couldn't take them. And then it brought in the whole issue of the space study. And I have to say, I have sat back and not said one single word about the space study for two rounds now because of my relationship with the crowds. Not because I didn't have an opinion on it one way or another, but I felt like it wasn't my fight. It felt like there was a lot of advocacy groups doing the work that they needed to do. And maybe I should just, you know, just step around that one and maybe not get involved as it was so close to home. So it just became in my mind, because then I had written to Lisa Grant, and then I didn't get a letter back from her. I got the email back from Rob Sharp, who told me that I would not be able to take them there because she was part of the space study. And I just kind of, I guess, you know, I wrote a letter back, which I've never had a reply to, just basically saying that I didn't understand, you know, when their sanctuary, when their, you know, short-term holding, long-term holding all overflow, when they're talking about taking another 13,000 horses off the range, and, you know, these long-term plans to get to low AML and everything else. I was just like, it just seems like common sense to me. If someone is offering to take three horses, just like I didn't understand it when I was offering to take 41 donkeys, why you would say anything but yes. I mean, mm-hmm. It just felt to me, I'm a sanctuary. I have 9,000 acres. I have a staff of seven. I have such qualified people to look after these horses, all of which I understand their limitations. I understand they can't, you know, give special care to certain horses, you know. So it just seemed to me like a no-brainer. Even if you took one mare off that space study and it was 99 horses instead of 100, it didn't make any sense. And one of the things that I had said to Lisa Grant, that if this mare was scheduled to go back to the wild, I would be more than happy to take all three, to leave her as wild, as untouched, you know, as you can possibly be, get the foals to strength, and then bring the mare back to be released. Because I'm more happy than anyone if this mare is on the list to be released. But it was when I then got a letter that she's actually going to be, you know, in the space study, I kind of weighed up the two things of thinking, well, I don't know how I feel about bringing this mare back to have surgery on and then turned out, or kept at the crowds and adopted out. You know, it seemed like the choice that I was offering them seemed to be a better one for them as a family. You know, we have a lot of land. They would live as free, you know, as they possibly could. And it seemed like three horses out, you know, the chances of her going back out unspayed or spayed seemed very slim in that number of 100. So so I just kind of weighed it up against that. And I'm sure now suddenly the man is going to be out free, and it's going to be, I'm trying to steal her freedom. And I understand, you know, there is a spin, a negative spin put on all of this. Apparently I'm doing it for fundraising now, even though I've never asked for a dime in the entire process of this, or put a fundraiser up or a donate button attached. But I think people are, you know, temperatures are running high right now, and I understand that they'll criticize anything I say or do. But it still comes down to whether you're for spay or against spay. I feel like a home offer for three equines in a really a facility that can give them, you know, unlimited vet care, unlimited feed, you know, alfalfa for the babies and the mama while she's nursing two babies. It just seemed so unreasonable, and I tried every argument I could, you know, I'll foster her and bring her back. I'll take, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? And it was just, it's always just a no, you know, and it's just frustrating. And I tried everything else, and I felt in my mind, well, if I'm not allowed to take special needs horses, and now this has happened with the Marin Falls, I thought, well, there's not really, for me, there isn't a point in just burning the bridge a little on the edges. I might as well napalm it and, you know, move on. Well, and you know, so
I've been getting a lot of comments too, Claire. For one thing, Gail Hunt, who's, I believe, in Oregon, sent me an email. She goes, I believe the selection of the twins' mom for the spay project constitutes a clear NEPA violation in terms of predetermined outcome, since the EA comment period isn't even up yet. So in other words, they're dead set on having this mare in their study when it's still an open public comment period.
That is absolutely correct, and I hadn't even thought of that. Gail Hunt, well done. That is a very good point. And no, I certainly read a lot in BLM literature about, you know, how they're, I totally understand, they're mandated to clear lands of wild horses for AMLs and whatever else. But then it said, you know, to get them into good homes. And it's kind of very clearly written. And I couldn't understand where in that it said, unless they're slated for some study or an experimental, or, you know, it just seemed like, well, hold on. If the opportunity has presented itself for corrals to, you know, for a sanctuary to take these horses out of the corrals, I just, it seemed nonsensical,
it
illogical.
Is.
I felt it was punishing. I felt it was spiteful. I felt it came from a place of power and control. And, you know, I had done this bad thing, and now I wasn't going to get what I wanted, and I couldn't get past that. And I just thought, you know, if this is the way a corrals is run, and it's based on, you know, the good old boys, and you're our friends, so you can have the best colored ones, but you can't, and if you bring me a bottle of vodka, you can have, it honestly has become almost like that isn't the way it should be run. It should be horses should go to a home unless it's, you know, found to be an, it's not qualified or can't give that home. Mm-hmm. You know, we are financially viable, financially successful, you know, with backing, with donors, with sponsors, with, you know, wonderful fundraising programs that are very successful, which is why I wouldn't need to fundraise for this. I also told them I would waive the $1,000 incentive fee. And that was just like, it, like, I kept pointing these things out. I'm like, you're paying people to take $1,000, you know, to take these horses away, but you won't give me three where you never have to pay a penny. Taxpayers are not, you know, funding them. Your staff aren't having to feed them. I just was like, what am I not getting about this?
Then there's the constant complaint that, oh, adoptions are down. Well, they make it so hard for people to adopt,
so
including putting most of the horses that are in holding on private property where they can't go see them, like Bruno, you know,
so
Indian Lakes Road. You know, and so, I don't know if our newer listeners, once horses go to long-term holding, they cannot be adopted.
No, they can be bought. They can be purchased by the truckload, and you cannot select them. And this last 2 years, the BLM has been making it increasingly difficult for people to even find horses that they want that have been rounded up. People who have been following horses for years and years, and they want to get them. The BLM has been putting all these roadblocks in the way for people to be able to get these horses. And it's just ridiculous. And it's got to stop. It's just got to stop.
I very much admire you, Claire,
for taking a stand and saying, I am not going to cater to this, and I'm going to let people know what happened and that the BLM is not acting in these horses' best interest. I think it's important for people to know this.
And, you know, these aren't Rob Sharp's horses. They're
These are our horses.
They belong
these
to all Americans. Our tax dollars pay for his salary for the BLM to run those corrals. And, you know, he runs it like it's his own ranch and it's his decision. And, you know, and it's wrong, too. And, you know, I wanted to get back to even just, you know, that this mare is on the list to be spayed. Bonnie Kohlreiter also sent me an email, and she said the point needs to be made. The decision has not even been made yet to sterilize the mares. The public is supposed to have the right to weigh in on sterilization. With the Oregon BLM saying they have slated this mare for a ripping out of her ovaries, the BLM is admitting they just plan to blow off the public and our government procedures.
And we're
supposed to have until
June 12th to comment.
Yeah.
And then at that time, they can issue a decision record, in which case we have another 30 days to comment. So, no, the decision has not been made. They are not going forward with the study yet. So, yes, it's ridiculous to say that this mare is in this slot and can't be moved.
Yeah, I agree. And to that point, Carol, it was extraordinary because I actually went to Rob Sharp's office to discuss the Warm Springs donkeys, to plead for more of them to be released was my initial plea. And if they wouldn't release more, to that I would take all of them. And I then said, you know, well, I said we're still in a public comment period. How are you so certain that you're not releasing any more donkeys? And I said, if I get 10,000 people to write comments, will it make any difference? And his actual words were, it's not a popularity contest, so no. And I was just shocked because I was like, well, what does make a difference? Why are we doing it then? If the decision is already made that zero donkeys are going out, why are we? And then I kind of made a point that a lot of the donkeys that were at the corrals were genetically amazing, like they were these peach colored and this really tall one that was like the size of a horse. And I was like, wouldn't you want to return some of those for genetics, you know, because I think a lot of them are inbred. They don't have tails and they've got stumpy ears and these double crosses. It seems like they're all related. And he said, we don't manage burros for genetics. We manage for a number. And I, again, was like, but why? I don't understand why they're different horses. And and also, you haven't done your spring aerial count, so how do you know that?
No, they haven't done the count yet.
But
they're supposed to do the count's supposed to be done in June, so they haven't even done a count, so that they're supposed to release these horses and burros to low AML. They haven't even done a count yet. So yes, it's like all the decisions are made. The count's just a formality. The comment period's just a formality.
Just a formality.
And
we just
they're going
to
do what they want to do.
And, correct. And that is definitely the impression that I got, and I don't understand then. Why do we go through these processes? It's almost like a sort of eye roll and an irritation to them that we have to kind of do NEPAs and EAs and everything else, and they don't make any difference. So it's just a broken system on every count, and I feel like this one issue seems to highlight so many of the frustrations that I've been banging my head against the wall about the last 3 years. And it was, I really did come into this with a very open mind in terms of, I'm not going to just read something that this advocacy group says and, you know, or, and just, you know, follow along like a sheep. I'm actually going to try to the best of my ability, you know, if there's an actual personal experience I have, to write about that and what it illustrates, or what a frustration that is, or why don't they, in these days of social media and phone cameras, can they not take a picture of horses during processing so that they can, you know, there could be some kind of register where you could see Joker and a picture of him and what his new tag number is, so that if you wanted to adopt him, you could. And that just seemed like these little things that maybe people, you know, that I could maybe fight for or say, hey, this would be a good idea. You know, but if there isn't any room for it. There's just no thinking outside the box. There's just roundups and holding. And it's just nothing's going to get better with that kind of thinking. And it's certainly not getting better if, you know, single individuals think that they are running this as their own private, you know, I don't
fiefdom.
Even know what to call
their
it.
Own, their
yes,
own private
exactly.
fiefdom. You know, it's not. And the space study itself is completely wrong. You know, I was reading through the new EA, and this is now the third time that they have tried to sterilize horses, sterilize mares, using these barbaric methods. And the first two times were stopped by lawsuits. And this is now the third time. And the EA goes on and on about how the sterilization is recommended by the advisory board, which is a joke anyway, and as if this is the only way to control the population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. And it's so insanely cruel and dangerous to these mares, and it is not a viable way to manage wild horse populations. But somebody at the BLM is dead set on that this is the only way that they can do it and that they have to do the sterilization. And it's actually shocking to think about that they're only going to release 24 to 36 of the 100 mares that have go through this gruesome operation. It's, you know, and then they're going to adopt out the rest of them? I mean, it's why would you do this? It just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make sense.
And I didn't just say, you know, stop the space study without looking into it, because I went to all three of our equine vets, and I asked their opinion on it, and I have two little sick donkeys at an amazing equine hospital, Alamo Pintado, and I talked to the people that are treating them, and I just, like, conversationally, I was like, what is your take on this, and what would be, you know, and all of them, the word horrified, and it's a horrible idea, and it's terrible, and the conditions are not ideal, and, you know, all of these things, I was like, well, so I'm not just reading some vet, you know, opinion online. You know, they were like, we very rarely spay a mare, and if we did, she would be in a sterile environment and on stall rest with antibiotics, with aftercare, you know, with cleaning the area and everything else that you would have to do to give that horse the best chance at.
And they wouldn't use that
surgery.
Method because it's an old, outdated
no.
method. They wouldn't use
yeah.
that method.
No.
The overreactomy.
No. So I'm just baffled. I don't understand what's behind it. I always feel like follow the money. There must be someone making something out of this. And, I mean, I guess if they get this space study through in Oregon, does that mean that, you know, it's kind of open season and they'll do it at every corrals and
well, they,
in the field?
Well, every corral,
and,
they want to do it out on public lands. Can you imagine, Claire? I mean, that's the
yes,
ultimate
they
goal. Have.
There's
they
an EA
out
already out in Wyoming.
Yeah, to do it
the
on
Lander
public
Complex.
Land.
The Lander yeah. Complex, they released that in January, and they plan to do spaying, gelding, chemical castration. They have a whole menu that they're planning
wow.
to try out on these horses in Wyoming. So they haven't come back with a decision record yet, but they have already done a scoping document.
Well, what are some things we can do that the public listening to us can do to, help with the, you know, we will put out an alert for
next week.
Action alert for the space study. But for as far as saving the foals, what can people do?
And it was funny because I was very careful in my wording that I said free the foals as opposed to save the foals. So I didn't want to imply they're in danger. And, you know, it was more like, look, just from a moral standpoint, if you're being given an opportunity to let these three horses, you know, be in a good place for the rest of their lives, why
mm-hmm.
wouldn't you take it?
Yeah.
And I had, like, because I didn't want to incite anger or any kind of abuse against anyone at the corrals, I was very specific in asking people to actually download a BLM adoption certificate, write her tag number up the top, put their name and address, and then just write send to Sky Dog, because I felt like it was a powerful, silent protest of support, you know, of how many people would like these horses to go with us. And it just kind of made a point about that. You know, I'm not asking people to picket the corrals or, you know, call up and shout at people. I just thought it was just a time to draw a line and say, you know, like, if one of those foals doesn't make it, I'm not going to blame anyone. I just think they have a better chance, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the kind
mm-hmm.
of care and attention we could give them. And,
oh, of course,
you know,
yeah.
I just wanted them to honor the agreement they made and honor the request that was made to me, you know, and if, like, I'm not suing for damages for the amount of time and effort it took me to go up there and emotional distress. I'm just kind of pointing out that it was, you know, it was a lot. It was their mistake, you know. I just think
well,
it would have been the easiest thing in the world to back down and just say, you know what, okay,
it was,
take
yeah,
these horses.
If Rob Sharp were going to do the good, the ethical and good thing, he would have just told Lisa Grant, listen, we've got, you know, tens of thousands of other mares in holding and,
mm-hmm.
You know, put another mare on the list.
300 others just from Warm Springs that they
yeah.
could pick.
Yeah.
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 And it's just, you know, and also even if, say he was having a bad day and was upset, he still had time to change that decision. So it's a bad management decision by Rob Sharp. And, you know, again, it's sad because it seems like some of the people at the corrals, they really care about the horses and were trying, you know, the fact that they had been
yeah.
calling you, you know.
Yep. I felt like
trying
that
to do,
too. And it is. It's really disappointing and it's heartbreaking to me on a lot of different levels. And, you know, even this weekend, there was an event at Oregon Teens Mustang where They reached out to me about a filly that they had competing, but she turned out to be, you know, too badly injured to be sold. And I went to such extraordinary lengths to try and find someone to take the horse, to go and pick the horse up, you know, who was a special needs horse. You know, she's like ripped her suspensory ligament and had a fracture. And I was so happy to do it. It made me feel so good, you know, that this, you know, nothing was going to happen to this horse. I won't even go into what they told me was going to happen to the horse, but it was going to be taken away and euthanized. But, you know, I will go out of my way. I'll go above and beyond to try and help any one single horse live a quality life, you know, live the life it was deserved. You know, I just feel if you take them off the range, there is some sense of responsibility at your feet to at least try for these animals, you know, mm-hmm, and if an opportunity is there for three of them to get out of a short-term holding, I still will argue that point, you know, whether you're for and against spay, whether you, you know, think she should go back in the wild, which is, you know, 24 to 36 horses out of 850 that they took off, and, you know, that have gone through this study. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter what way you look at it. It's not justifiable. I don't even know if it's legal. And that's the point I'm making. And I'm just one person. I don't have a marketing team, a press person. It was like me and my volunteer trying desperately to, like, make a graphic and come up with a slogan. And, mm-hmm. you know, just to make a point, like, it's not right. Like, we care about those three horses. You know, we care about them. We care that they're okay, that they're taken care of. They're not getting excellent care, no matter what anyone at the crowd says, because they don't have the staff and time and means and money mm-hmm. to give that kind of care. And I understand that, you know, that's a budgeting issue. But if I'm offering to give it, you know, mm-hmm. maybe just come down off your high horse and change your mind.
Well, and also, Claire, on the promo, I put down the email address of Holly Waddell, who's the of the BLM Wild Horse and Burro Program. She's the director of the off-range facilities. I also put the email address of Teresa Hanley, who's the state director of Oregon. And I asked people to please ask that this Rob Sharpe's decision be reconsidered, and that you be allowed to take the foals and the mare and their mom. You know,
well, I will
so
try
hopefully
to do the same thing. I'll get those emails, and I actually have put together a sort of final request, I guess, to mm-hmm. ask, and I was going to CC some of the people higher up or people
mm-hmm. absolutely.
I actually already did write to Alan Shepard last week when I was told this and ask him to intervene, but I never received a reply. He's in Washington.
And I think Carol had a great idea that we ask people to contact their congressional representatives. This is a big issue. You know, the BLM's complaining they can't get enough adoptions, and, you know, they seem to be very worried about their image, and then they do something like this that, you know, doesn't help their image when they refuse these two foals and the mayor to let you take them, which is, you know, a lot of American people want you to. So...
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's bad for them. So contacting your congressional representatives. And even if anybody wants to, you could go to the Facebook page of for Sky Dog Sanctuary and, you know, print up part of the article about it and just, you know, send that in an email or fax to your congressional representative and ask them to look into it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you can also go to our Facebook page. There's our petition on there that has already had, like, way over 15,000 signatures, which I'm amazed at. And I think every single one of them means a lot to us because it's somebody that took the time to fill that in and actually cared enough to. Because
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, a lot of things in our world that, you know, and I know petitions in themselves really do nothing. It was more of a representative of just kind of a way for people to make their voice heard and at least say they cared. And I think on a personal level to me and my staff, that meant a lot. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's been wonderful seeing the outpouring of people caring. I mean, I'm not kidding. I've had people write to me, and this is not one person. I've had people say, can I give them $10,000 for the horse? Can I give them $5,000 for the horses? Can I give them $4,000 for the horses? Like, would they take money for the horses? And I have said, I have no idea. I think that's bribing a government official. I don't think they're going to be able to take your money. But if
well,
you want to,
you know,
that,
the BLM gave kill buyer Tom Davis, they gave him, you know, or sold them for $10 a piece, almost over 1,800, almost 1,900 horses. So, you know, we shouldn't have to pay for this.
No, but it was just, to me, it was just extraordinary that people were, you know, they so much cared and so much wanted to help these horses out of there that they were saying this. And I was just like flabbergasted, you know, that people were that kind of motivated or, you know, excited to try and help. But, you know, that isn't the way to do it. The way to do it is by, and I don't know, I felt from the beginning, you know, in a way for me, I've already gone through the grieving for Elsa and her twins, and I've already kind of let go of the hope that they might come to us, because I feel like from the beginning, the BLM has always exhibited the same kind of behavior when challenged, is to entrench and defend and justify and, you know, deny, and just they won't move on their position. And I just think on a general level, if I was going to say anything, it's just, you know, for people to maybe, instead of just defending your position, because you've stated your position. Now the dogs are quiet, please. Sorry.
Yeah, they always like to join in.
I'm so sorry. I actually told my husband not to come home, because he's going to make the dogs bark. I said, do not come home for an hour. You'll make the dogs bark. But I guess he's gone out of places.
That's okay.
We have
our dogs barking on the radio show many other times.
Well, you just
as a matter of fact,
Kirsten
Stayed of Pier was doing a radio show with me, and there was a storm where she was, and her dog was sitting in her big dog was sitting in her lap the entire time. So,
oh my goodness! I think mine would be too. He's afraid of thunder.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know,
I am publicly asking the BLM to reconsider this decision, and please send the two foals and their mother to Sky Dog Sanctuary. So I'm asking publicly.
Thank you.
And you know, I'm asking
as soon as possible. That it be done as soon as possible, because those two twins need the best care. We want them to both.
And
we
would
them
be
to
happy
survive.
To pick them up any single time that they give us. We are, you know, 2 hours away. We can send a trailer. We'd be happy to. We've picked up over 30 horses from that corrals in the past. And, you know, I think they know they're not disputing what good care we take of them. And he did make that point in the email, and I appreciate that. And I just
and also we're willing to put the word out that they've done the right thing.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, Claire, I'm here in Los Angeles too. I will come over to your. I will come to your sanctuary and videotape the foals, and you know.
I mean,
we'll put something up.
Let's hope it happens. I don't know, but you know, I don't want to get my hopes up. I don't want to get my, you know, but it would be an amazing thing. I think it would be a very positive thing. I think it would be a win for all parties concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at any moment someone can choose to step down from
the right
position
thing.
And possibly, and do the right thing. And I feel like
it's
the right thing. And I
hope
it happens.
It's one thing we have issues about policies and how things could be improved, but this is about doing the right thing. You know, in my mind, it's like being a good human being and doing the right thing. So hopefully, you know,
and it's about the
Holly
horses.
Waddell or
it's
or,
about the, it's about the horses. It's not
it
about
is.
Personalities. It's not about the BLM. It's not about Sky Dog. It's not about you or me. It's about the horses and what's best for them.
100%. And that's the question I ask every single decision I ever make. I'm like, is this going to help the horse? You know, and I have to say, I went backwards and forwards about whether to do this because I was actually seriously concerned this would make things bad for the horses. I worried that, you know, this was going to be a negative, and you know, but I thought, you know, I sat on the dirt and I looked at those babies and I told them their lives were going to make a difference. And they might not be different by coming to SkyDog, but maybe they can make a difference for all the other horses that are still in government holding. Maybe it'll make it easier for people to adopt, maybe. You know, because I honestly feel like I should be able to turn up at that corral or any corral with a semi-truck and go, I'll have 4 stripy ones, 2 spotted, oh, I'll take the mule and 8 donkeys. And they'd
absolutely.
Be like,
absolutely.
You know, please sit down.
Yes.
Here's a drink. We'll get them loaded. I mean, why? What reason would they not have to do that? It would. It seems to me, I'm not saying I'm the greatest thing in the world to ever to happen to horses, but it, you know, it costs us a lot to do that personally. You know, my husband bought all the ranches, he pays all the salaries, he bought all the vehicles and the equipment on his dime. You know, we only fundraise for feed, farrier, vet care, you know, hay. It's like it goes to the horses, and I don't know that many sanctuaries or nonprofits that can say that. And, you know, I don't think anybody can argue with the, you know, care and attention that we give to every single horse that we have. You know, I feel that horses that come in my path came there for a reason, and I guess these 3 came in my path for a reason, and I've done what I could, and I really appreciate both of you, you know, being supportive, getting the word out there, you know, speaking
well,
out.
We'll
for
continue
that.
To do so. We'll continue
well, we
to
will
follow
continue
up
to do
on
so.
This.
And the other thing is, I feel that you should be able to speak up. And all of us should be able to speak up when we see something is wrong. And when we see what the BLM doing is wrong. We cannot be blackmailed into being silent because we're afraid that somehow the horses are going to suffer because the BLM is unhappy that we're disagreeing with them. That is not right. And I will not put up with that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important.
I think that's a very good point.
I think it's very important that people speak out and not be gagged. And so that's really why we wanted to do this radio show and get the word out and try to help these horses.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire, I really appreciate it. And it's been scary for me, I must say. Like, I have felt, you know, this isn't where I've always tried to be really positive. I don't bash organizations. I don't bash individuals. I haven't criticized or judged. I've very much tried to lead with love and be the change and try and just focus on what we're doing. But I guess when it came down to it, I felt like there wasn't any other thing to do to help the horses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's out there now. There's kind of no walking it back. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I hope,
well,
Rob, if you're listening, we would still love to take them. And any other special needs horses you have, still love to take them.
And I hope that happens. I hope it happens, too.
Me, too.
Yes.
I wanted to let everybody know, you know, SkyDog Sanctuary, I looked at your website, and I was really impressed by the stories of, you know, so many of the Mustangs. You know, it almost ripped my heart out when I read that one of the Mustangs that you brought, the companion that was with it, had cigarette burns on its face. And, you know, a lot of wild horses fell through the cracks and were not included on the Wild Horse and Burro Act. But then a lot of our wild horses and burros are ending up in kill pens. And it's you know, it's causing more of a concern with this proposal to round up 60,000 horses in 3 years. And that's why we're very outspoken about that plan. I've got 3 more minutes here, and Claire's, I'll let you have you and Carol each have a closing comment, and then I'll close the show out. So, Claire, anything you forgot to say you want to let everybody know?
I just want to say that it'd be nice to each other. I mean, I still don't have any personal animosity towards anyone at the BLM corrals, and, you know, I understand to a certain degree they're trying to do their job, but I just, you know, I feel like this is an easy thing to rectify and put right, and it really wouldn't cost anyone anything. And, you know, I hope that I can continue some kind of working relationship with the crowds. And if not, you know, The one thing I know is that there will never be a shortage of Mustangs to rescue, and I can open my inbox any day and find 20 more. So, you know, we'll be guided in a different direction if that's where we're going, but we will not stop saving as many horses as we can and giving them sanctuary and giving them the life that was taken from them and that they deserve.
Well, from all of us, thank you for all that you're doing, Claire.
Thanks,
you know,
Debbie.
A big thank you from everybody. I'll say it on behalf of everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. Carol, did you have anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
Just also to please look for our blog post next week about commenting on the space study. And the comments are due June 12th, and we'll have some suggestions of what you can talk about in your comments. Mm-hmm. And it's very important. Even though we were saying that the BLM may make light of the comment period, it's very important that you comment.
Yes.
And it's very important also that you talk to your senators and representatives.
Okay, and I wanted to thank Debbie Dahmer for being our guest producer tonight. She has a radio show called Voices Carry for Animals on at Animal Advocate Radio on Thursday nights on Blog Talk. Thank you so much, Debbie Dahmer, for hosting for us tonight. And that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're out of time.
Good night.
Thank you all. Good night. Bye-bye.